It's an Upbeat Pod this week as we look forward to the festive feast of football. We discuss Haaland's heavy sales, Manchester United's prospects under Amorim, plus there's an upturn in fixtures for both Arsenal and Chelsea. Happy Thursday, everyone. FPL is back because the Premier League is back. So, of course, we've not been anywhere, but FPL Pod is back as well. Kelly Summers alongside Julian Leron and Sam Bonfield as usual. George, you've got a big smile on your face today. Is that because...
I'm happy to see you. I'm happy to do this show. It's great. And league football is back. So, as you know, I love international football. I love all sorts of football, but it's still good those few days before all the league starts again.
Sam just looks nervous and I don't know why. You've got a great team. You don't need to look so apprehensive.
I always feel a bit worried when we come back after an international break. There's always that moment of like, what are the managers going to say? And are they going to absolutely ruin my plans for the
Who's going to be rested? That's the one that always worries me.
Yeah,
who's had
exactly.
a long journey? Who's picked up a knock that we didn't know about?
Exactly.
But you have got a good team. We spoke about it last week. Your wild card has put you in a good place going into this international break. I think I listened back to last week's pod. I'm not quite as down as I'm quite down right now. But I've decided to spin this into a positive. I present the FPL pod. I need to be a bit more upbeat. So this is going to be the time where I turn my season around. So I hope you guys have got some tips for me because I need all the tips I can get. Jules, international football. You didn't go to any games, did you? Am I right?
No, not this time. No, not this time.
But you've been watching everything, haven't you? So what do we need to know?
Loads of things, because loads of Premier League players have done really well in this international break. Some have scored a lot of goals, like Erling Haaland. Some a bit less, like Bruno Fernandes, but still scoring. Heung-min Son scored. Some played two games, like Son. Like Haaland, Bruno only one, for example. William Saliba only one for Arsenal. Kai Havertz scored as well. Mo Salah didn't go at all with Egypt, which I guess if you own him and if you're a Liverpool fan or on a slot, is good news, because that's not the case for everybody at Liverpool. And as we remember, we talk about it every single international break, especially for the South American players, especially the one at Liverpool. It's a long, quite heavy trip. So Darwin Nunez played two games. One full, one just over an hour. Luis Diaz played two games, full two games, by the way, 90 minutes each for Colombia. Alexis McAllister played also two games, one full, one also full. Szoboszlai, that's okay. He was in England with Hungary. Curtis Jones too with England. So loads of Liverpool players out there doing really, really well, but playing a lot, and those South Americans will come back late. Chris Wood. Remember him? Yeah, that's Chris Wood.
We can't forget Chris Wood.
Well, you can't forget.
He's in my team.
He's in your team. Well, he was also in the team that played Samoa and Vanuatu with New Zealand in his international break and scored five goals between the two games. So I think maybe I would have scored against Vanuatu. No offense to the Vanuatis, or however you call them. But hey, Chris Wood's still in great form, I guess. And finally, if you're a Ghana fan or if you own any Ghanaian players like Antoine Semenyo, for example, in your team. Well, the good news for you, the bad news for them is that they missed out on qualification for the next AFCON, which is at the start of the year. So, okay, we've got a bit of time before we start talking about AFCON. But there will be no Ghana AFCON at the start of 2025. So no Semenyo going away for a month, or Jordan Ayew, for example. To the contrary of Egypt or Ivory Coast, Senegal, Nigeria, Algeria, all those kind of teams are going. So we will have to talk about them when the start of the new year.
That was impressive.
That is the best one you've done. You fit so much information into such a short period of time. George, did you fill your whole talent planning vision notebook with that?
Pretty much. If you look, it's so up there. Then I added Ghana a little bit at the top and AFCON. Yes.
Oh, yeah, I can just about see. No, thank you very much. That was very comprehensive and very good. Even looking ahead to AFCON already, that is real talent planning and vision, Jules. I'm impressed. Sam, we spoke about it last week. There's quite a few injuries, isn't there? Who are you going to be particularly listening out for, and who are you particularly concerned about ahead of the press conferences and return of the football?
I mean, I think that's the problem, isn't it? Is that you never really know on an international break how many of these injuries are genuinely injuries and how many of them are international injuries, shall we say. So I guess all eyes will be on the kind of heavily owned players, so the Sakas, the Palmers, although he's been pictured back in training, so he looks like he's fine. And Bomo, he's another one that, you know, is heavily owned. People will be waiting to see whether the flags lift. So those guys, I guess, are on the radar. I've got decisions to make about whether I bring in Saka or not, because obviously, as I said to you before, when I wildcarded, the decision was to go with Bruno over him temporarily. So waiting to see what Arteta's got to say. Probably nothing, and Saka will certainly be fine. But it's just one of those, isn't it? Wait and see, I guess, on the bigger names, and don't panic, and see where we go after the presses.
I feel like we've been here before, haven't we, with Mikel Arteta and Saka. So yeah, just whatever he said, just bear in mind that a lot can change between a press conference and a game, as we've learnt in the past. Okay then, let's look ahead. Oh, before I do look ahead, I keep forgetting to say the pod mini league code. Q7YCO, the letter O, 0. Do join us if you aren't in there already. I did a little check-in last week. We'll do another check-in next week with how you guys are doing as well. Talking of checking in, time to check in on the chips, because as we know, in an international break, you guys love to press a button just to keep yourselves busy. In particular, wildcards. Over 103,000 of those are active, almost 60,000 triple captains, almost 40,000 free hits, and just over 30,000 bench boosts are active. Is that where we'd expect it to be at, Sam?
I think so. I think I expected slightly more wild cards than there have been, but then I guess a lot of the really engaged managers have already played them, so there's probably a more limited pool of the top managers that still haven't yet hit the button. And I guess it is quite difficult, isn't it, over an international break, because there are a lot of flags on big players. So maybe some people are waiting. I wouldn't be surprised to see that rise a little bit ahead of the deadline, but I mean, in reality, the number of wildcards that are played between now and the next wildcard window opening will probably get less and less every week as people kind of have used it already.
Jules, I'm going to test your knowledge here, but I'm sure you know this one. When do you have to use your first wildcard by?
By game week 19, right? Halfway through the season?
Yes, correct. Well done. Yeah, just a reminder to everyone.
You barely breathed this morning.
You looked so nervous when I asked you that. You didn't breathe. I knew you'd know it. I wouldn't sit you up, or would I? Just a reminder, game week 19 is when you need to use that first wild card. And if you are new to the game, then you should also know that, don't worry, you do get another wild card in the second half of the season. And if you are counting down to getting your new wild card, trust me, you are not the only one. I'm looking forward already to that chip coming. Okay, then, with wild cards on the brain, I think it's a good time to check in with team formation. Jules, you've also got a few free transfers, which does enable you to kind of, maybe if you wanted to, change things around a bit. Firstly, what are your early thoughts? Have you done anything yet? Are you going to be doing anything?
No, I mean, yeah, I've thought long and hard about it. And the problem I have is not, my season is not really good, as we mentioned on the show last week. There's still plenty of time to get better, obviously, for all of us. But the issue I have is that I'm really happy with the team. There's a lot of players I like, okay, outside of allegiances and players that, obviously, as you know, I have to have, even for my own OCD and friendships. But overall, I'm quite happy because I think Kai Havertz, for example, who has been in good form, and then a bit like Arsenal, actually not doing that great lately, but I like the fixtures coming up. And I think you could easily sell Kai Havertz right now, but I would be left with no Arsenal attacker, which I don't want to, for example. So I'm really reluctant to let him go and replace him with a Cunha or Chris Wood or, you know, whatever, to also get a bit of more money in the bank. I like the idea of Bruno Fernandes. I think it was great from Sam to bring him in, and I think he's going to do really well under Ruben Amorim. And I think United as a whole are going to do really well now. But I'm not really sure where I could fit him in, because I don't want to lose Mbomo. I love Mbomo. I think he's great to have. So this is where I am. Really, I'm really happy with the team, although I know there's other players I would like in the team, but I'm not really sure who I should let go to bring in those other players.
I think a lot of people are going to have similar conundrums to Jules, Sam, aren't they? Because even my team that, obviously, as I've said, has been underperforming even more than Jules has been underperforming, I still look at it and I'm like, I'm going to struggle to work out who to get rid of. It goes back to what we said about last week in terms of there's a lot of players performing, but no one's consistently performing. So we are kind of having to jump around. And it feels like there's been an element of, obviously, we all plan, we all have talent, we all have vision, but there's been an element of luck this year as to whether you've been on the right players at the right time. And we've seen, if we want to look back to that man, Cole Palmer, if you jump off the people at the wrong time, it can really penalise you.
Absolutely. And I think that is the issue that FPL managers have this year, is that we're being forced to make difficult decisions. And I think that the pricing has a lot to do with that, because the game has been priced so well this year and we can't all just have everybody that we want. It's making us make these really difficult decisions, and you're having to choose between, say, having Saka and Palmer, or you're having to choose between having Salah and Haaland. And all of these decisions are having a knock-on impact. And if you get it right and you're on the right players at the right moment and you can switch around successfully, it can be highly rewarding. But the problem is it can also go the other way, and you can end up selling the wrong players at the wrong time. And if you do that, that can be really painful in terms of your rank. So I think it's difficult. I think in terms of the formations and how you're setting up your team, it's just making sure that you are being as flexible as you can be with the peripheral players and moving those guys around. And like Jules said, selling players like Mbeumo who have been in such good form, it's really difficult to do. But at some point, that might be where we end up looking if Bruno Fernandes does continue to be a good asset and we still want to be heavily invested in players like Cole Palmer and Saka and Salah across the middle, because them finding the space to have him is going to be a challenge.
What is the best formation, do you think, we should be playing, Jules? Is it 3-4-3 because of the form of the forwards and the budget forwards and the fact that people... I don't know if the fact that people are moving away from Haaland plays into that or not. Well, what do you think?
I don't know. I thought about this one again preparing for the show last night, and I think because of the lack of clean sheets this season that we see defensively, and okay, it's not completely a crazy year in that sense. We've had years, quite similar years down the past, but still you would expect maybe some defensive to be stronger and some players defensively to do a bit better. And the fact that, for example, Onana is the top goalkeeper in the game, considering how bad his team has been doing, is a bit weird compared to David Raya, for example, or even the Liverpool goalkeeper, who maybe is not right up there because of Alisson's injuries. But still, so I find that quite interesting. So I would go with the back three simply on that basis, and you can have three really good defenders, some maybe a bit more attacking, like Gvardiol, let's say, even if City can't, for their lives, not concede a goal in the game, but yet Gvardiol is still, I think, a very good player to own. But I think I go for a back three with a really strong five in midfield, because again, as we've been saying, and which was a bit like the case last season too, there's a lot of strength in that midfield to have if you can share that budget really, really nicely. And then that leaves you a front two, because if you want a strong midfield five, you might not have Erling Haaland up front, and then have two good strikers, but not as heavily priced as Haaland, which would enable you to have five really, really good midfielders. So I go 3-5-2.
Yeah. What do you think, Sam? It does feel like all of the value is in the midfield, and particularly when it comes to the premiums as well.
I think in terms of the premiums, for sure, the midfield feels like the place to go, particularly as, and we've said this before, they get obviously the additional points for the clean sheets and the goals and all of that. So in terms of, you know, if you have Haaland or Salah, and they do exactly the same in a game, Salah will always outscore Haaland because he will have the additional benefit of those extra points. So from that perspective, it's better to have your premiums in the midfield. I think for me, I like the idea of having a proper front eight at the moment, because I think then, because the front three can be, if Isak is your most expensive forward, and then you have two that are coming in around the six and a half to five and a half bracket, so the likes of Acuna and a João Pedro maybe alongside, that's a front three that you probably don't want to bench very often. Same if you've got somebody like, you know, Wissa in there or whoever it might be. So by having them alongside maybe somebody like Morgan Rogers in that fifth midfielder spot means that you can rotate between playing 3-4-3 or 3-5-2. And I think having that flexibility is nice. The one thing I will say is that I think the three at the back, potentially there will be weeks where you end up benching a defender that you quite want to play because they've got a nice fixture, and because there's so many good defenders in the 4.5 bracket this season. So you've got the likes of Ait Nouri, Lewis Hall is starting to come into the conversation for a lot of managers, Mazraoui at Manchester United, even like players like Gusto at Chelsea. Like if you want to go for lots of players in that cheap bracket, then you actually could, there could be some weeks where you do want to play four at the back, and you might just have a lot of points on the bench at some points.
Are you still saying play back three?
Yeah, I am.
You just sit on the fence, basically, don't you?
No, I think...
No, she raised it. It's a really valid point. I know what she means. But I've been in that position where I've spoken about Mikulenko.
Yeah.
Like, he's had a nice fixture, but I haven't wanted to play him. And that is also because, obviously, Everton have struggled to keep clean sheets. They only keep clean sheets when I bench him.
Yeah.
But it is... I think that's what you kind of almost have to play your midfielders, play your premiums, and then just know that every so often you probably aren't going to play the right defenders. It is tough.
That's why on Wildcard, I went for Seth Vandenberg in my fifth defender slot, because I know that there's weeks where I'm basically always going to be choosing between playing Lewis Hall and Ait Nouri, and some weeks I'm going to end up having to bench one of them in a game that I really don't want to bench them in because I don't want to bench any extras of the front eight that I have. So I'm already going to have to bench one of them every week. So I guess for me, I'm saying I think playing a back three every week is the right thing to do, but I think you just have to accept that some weeks, because the back five can look really nice because there's a lot of value in the defenders, you probably will end up benching the wrong one and have points on the bench.
Okay, so it's a warning, but it's something that we can't do anything about. Yeah. So just ride it out, because I think we're all going to be in the same boat. I was just checking out the transfers out since the last deadline, and Alexander-Arnold and Haaland are way out ahead of everyone else. We understand Alexander-Arnold with the injury and the fact that he's 7 million, the most expensive defender in the game. Haaland's 30,000. Do you understand it, Jules? I know that you're saying you will not sell him.
Mm. Yeah, completely.
Would anything change that? Because 30,000 people this week alone are parting company. And of course, it is a lot of money, still 15.2.
Yeah. No. I understand it completely because of how expensive it is, how much it will cost you to bring in a new team, what you can do with that money if you go for a player, even a really good striker like an Isak or a Nico Jackson that is half the price. Can imagine what you can do by reinvesting that extra money. So I understand it completely. I think it's super risky. I would not do it. I would not be able to sit through a weekend of Premier League football with no Erling Haaland in my team and just thinking, oh my God, what's going to happen? Because if it's what we always said, the day he scores and you don't own him, then it's going to hurt you massively. So that's the only reason. But I really admire people who go without him, because I think he's really brave to start with, and it makes a lot of sense as well. I would like to see even his ownership going even lower, because then we'll have a proper... I don't think it's good for the game when somebody is owned much, to be fair. That's the only thing.
Mm. Yeah, he's just over 63% owned at the moment, but surely you can't sell him ahead of Spurs at home, can you, Sam?
Surely not.
Not you. I mean, man, I know you've already sold him, but I've seen a few people saying they are going to captain him.
What, against Spurs?
Yeah.
I mean, the Spurs defence is... we're just about as allergic to clean sheets.
It's the Etihad, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, although we do tend to travel up there quite well, in fairness. I guess eyes on the press conference to see whether Mickey van der Ven is fit or not, because that would obviously make a difference. Yeah, look, but the thing is, Cows, if you don't have Salah, then selling Haaland at home to Spurs to have Salah against Southampton probably does make sense in a lot of people's mind, particularly if that also gives you Isak versus West Ham. So you've got to kind of consider, Jules is right, it's terrifying not having Haaland. When he played against Brighton last week, I was like, this is awful. But then I felt exactly the same every week that I didn't have Salah. So this season, with the way the pricing has gone, you are going to have to feel uncomfortable watching some matches. It's just which match you're going to feel uncomfortable watching. So for me, with the form that Salah and Liverpool are in, I feel a lot better having him in my team in comparison to Haaland, because Man City haven't been at their best so far this season. So there's going to be tough choices to make. Would I sell Haaland just to sell Haaland this week? No. Would I sell Haaland because it allows me to get Salah and Isak in my team this week? Yes. So I guess you have to decide where your priorities are.
Yeah, it's the move I'm considering making. It really is.
Ooh, really?
Yeah, I think so, because I just think that Salah is in... He's consistent, and we are striving for consistent players in FPL, Jules. And if you can only have one of them right now, for me, I'd rather have his points ticking over. Knowing my luck, he'll now stop ticking over. And I think the likes of Isak coming back into the conversation with Newcastle's fixtures, it felt a lot harder to do to go down to a 6 million striker, whereas an Isak feels a little bit more premium. So makes me feel a little bit more comfortable. I mean, as comfortable as you can be not owning Erling Haaland. I haven't decided that yet. Also, we've got to bear in mind that next week, after this fixture, when Liverpool have Southampton and... Liverpool have Southampton, don't they? Yeah, Manchester City have Spurs. Then it is Liverpool facing City. Mm-hmm. So
that's right.
I don't know what we do about that one, to be honest. It's a really tricky one. I'm thinking of doing it. However, if I do that transfer, it does mean that Dominic Calvert-Lewin survives another week.
Oh,
my goodness.
You love your Dom.
I know.
You love him so much.
He loves first bench spot. He just loves it. He's keeping that bench warm for me, because I can't... Even though he's got a home fixture, I can't play him because he just doesn't score.
He's like your assistant manager. He is always sitting next to you on the bench.
Yeah, he's been... Well, he's not doing a very good job. He's doing as bad as I am. That's the thing. I would like... If I bring in Salah, it helps me have Salah and be a bit happier on that, but it doesn't sort out some of the other headaches that I have in the players around that, because realistically, Haaland isn't a massive headache. Like, I like having him, and I'd probably be selling... I can do... Bringing Salah and Isak for Semenyo and Haaland.
What have you got? Two free transfers?
Yeah.
That sounds good, girls.
Yeah, I quite like those moves.
Me too.
But then, I've still got Calvert-Lewin, but I would just be playing the five in midfield, because my five in midfield would be Saka, Rodgers, Salah and Bumo Palmer, and they've all got good fixtures.
What's wrong with that? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
What's wrong with that is that I'm still not totally comfortable with no Haaland. I've just got to work out, you know, like when you've just got to work out which way the scales are tipping, I've got a draft ready to go like that, but it's just whether I do it or not. Or I can wait another week, have three transfers and sort out Dominic Calvert-Lewin at the same time. But then I'll be bringing in Salah on the week he's got City and missing out on Southampton fixtures.
Although Salah against the top team doesn't really matter. So maybe he always scores anyway. So.
Very true. I'm just very envious, Jules. I often find myself flicking back to look at your team going, how has he got both of them?
Remember, he doesn't have Palmer.
Yeah. And you don't have Saka. So
yeah, exactly.
Can't have them all.
Exactly.
Also, I think I like us all having different teams. It makes it a lot more interesting because we kind of reflect all different FPL managers at the moment, I feel like, in terms of Jules has got both of them. I've just got Haaland. You've just got Salah, Sam. I'm not managing my team for the basis of this podcast.
But you know what? I think a lot of the listeners as well, or people who watch on YouTube, will have the same conundrum than we do on they would be in our position each on some would have sold him already, some still would have him like me trying to get both of them, and some like you, Kel, is trying to think, okay, which one should I keep and which one should I go for. I think it's the story for me of one of the stories of this season in the game.
So it goes back to what we said before, it's made for a better game, hasn't it, in terms of it's a bit more interesting, although yeah, if you fall on the wrong way of it, like I feel like I have so far, it's not so much fun. Okay, let's talk about Manchester United. We've mentioned Bruno Fernandes' name a few times on this podcast already. Of course, Manchester United fans have got big hopes. Ruben Amorim, he has taken over as Manchester United boss. His first game will be away at Ipswich this weekend. Many might say that's a nice fixture to start with. Then his first home fixture is also not too bad either. Everton in game week 13. Then the fixtures do go a little bit more mixed. Arsenal, Forest, Manchester City, Bournemouth and Wolves. Jules, firstly, you watch a lot of European football.
Yeah.
I think a lot of us, since Amorim was announced to be taking over, a lot of us paid a lot more attention, particularly when they played City in the Champions League as well. But you'll have seen a lot more of him. What can we expect?
I think he's a very exciting young coach. He will turn 40 at the start of the year. So really, really young, even in the experience that he had.
Younger than you, Jules?
Yeah, slightly. don't hold me too much. Don't age me too much. But yeah, very exciting. And I think it's a long time since we got halfway through the season, probably when Jurgen Klopp came to Liverpool in that October month, that we got so much excitement from a new manager arriving in the league. I'm not saying in the summer, but halfway through the season like Amorim does. I think if you're a United fan, you should be very excited and you should be quite optimistic because he's super, super good and super talented. So it will take him time probably to turn things around. And we said they haven't had a good start of this season at all. And they're 13th in the table and they have won as many games as they've lost in the league. So this is not good. But I think he will improve them massively collectively and individually. What we've seen already from the few clips that we saw from him at training, Carrington, it looks like from what he's done at training with a small squad, because a lot of players were away on international duties, but it looks like he could keep the 3-4-3 formation that he had at Sporting, that he's very settled on. We were not sure if he would go to something more traditional because he won't have much time to work on things. But it looks like at training, they've been working on the 3-4-3. So a back three that I think will make them more solid defensively already. Luke Shaw back at training, Leny Yoro back at training, for example, too. Obviously, Onana in goal, as we said, the top goalkeeper in the game so far this season. So I think that probably will make Onana better, that will make United defensively better. And then it's whoever is at midfield four, whoever are the two wingbacks. Could he change a Garnacho into a wingback? Anthony played wingback at training, for example. I don't think we will see Anthony against Ipswich, but this is what the kind of things that Amorim can do. He could change Rashford into a wingback or Garnacho into a wingback if he feels that's the right move to do and to make. So we will have to wait a little bit more and see, but I think the 3-4-3 could be very good. And for us, that could get the best out of Haaland, for example, up front, the best out of Bruno in midfield, the best out of Ugarte, or the best defensively again of Alessandro Martinez, a Yoro, a Luke Shaw, anything like that. So I think there's a lot for us to keep an eye on.
Sam, you're a Dalot and Bruno owner, is that correct?
Yeah, doubled up.
Yeah, that doubles good, up. Do you think they're the main two players people should be looking at? Jules has spoken there of the 3-4-3. Who's going to benefit from an FPL point of view?
I'm really quite seriously watching Hoyland, because I do think that the way that the front line is right now and the way that the midfield five is right now. So I've got Bruno. I'm delighted to have him for the next couple anyway. And obviously I've got the 17 points from last week already in the bag. So that's great. But longer term, there has to be compromises. So it's if you're going to keep Salah and you want to have Palmer, and I've then got Bruno, where's Saka fitting into all of this? And that's the difficulty. Whereas if I find that Hoyland actually does become the asset that we kind of all thought that he was going to be when he signed for Manchester United, then that's great, because that means I can free up my midfielder slot, save a little bit of money, because obviously he's cheaper than Bruno as well, and have him up top. Right now, with the uncertainty around how they're going to set up, I think Bruno and Dalot feel like really nice picks. If we get 2-3 game weeks down the line and actually there's a better defender option that's cheaper, then I'll move from Dalot down and free up a little bit of extra money that way, because it would enable strengthening elsewhere. But I'm really happy to have those two right now. And I think for the next couple, they look like really nice options.
Yeah, so, they're also at some nice... Sorry, Jules. They're also at some really nice price points as well, aren't they? I think that's... I'm just going to name a couple of the prices. Dalot's 5.2, Rashford 6.9 if he can find some form. Hoyland 6.9 as well. Bruno's only 8.4. So compared to some of those other premium midfielders, could enable you to get to a Salah. Sorry, Jules, what were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say that Xerxes was... Hoyland was away with Denmark. Not that he did great. Xerxes was also away with the Netherlands. Not that he didn't play that much. Didn't do great either. It's two goals so far this season for Manchester United for Hoyland. One for Xerxes, that was his first game against Fulham back in August. And Rashford, probably because Hoyland and Xerxes were away and not at training with Amorim for his first few days, Rashford was the one playing as a number nine in this 3-4-3 formation that we explained that Amorim seems to be working on already on the training ground. So I don't know if that means that Rashford could play there on Sunday, or if Hoyland, who is a more traditional number nine, obviously, than Rashford, and probably more Amorim compatible than Rashford, would probably start there. But just for listeners to know that Rashford was the one in that number nine position of training this week.
Yeah, really interesting insight there. It'll be something we'll talk about a lot more, I'm sure, particularly once we've seen them against Ipswich. And as the weeks go on, we'll understand a little bit more about what they're going to look like. But like I said, some really interesting and appealing price points. So would be useful to us potentially if Manchester United could find some form. Okay, alongside Manchester United then, there are a number of teams on the fixture ticker who have a really nice run of fixtures throughout the festive period. We've spoken about Wolves and Bournemouth as well, actually, in recent weeks. But now we've got teams... And this is where it gets interesting, because some of the bigger teams, Arsenal, Chelsea, and also Brighton and Newcastle, moving their way up the ticker as well. Let's start with Arsenal, Jules. They're top of the ticker from game week 12 to 19. How are we feeling about Arsenal? What sort of response are we expecting? Because you said it yourself on this podcast, not exactly in their best moment.
Yeah, they had a tough times both in the league and in Europe as well, in the Champions League. At some point, they are too good not to turn things around, I think. And yet, there have been a few injuries, like Calafiori and Timber have been out. Rice has been a little bit not 100%, let's put it that way. We saw Trossard with Belgium coming off really early in the second game. I mean, he didn't look like he wanted to play that game anyway in the first place. So I don't know how serious the injuries, but he still left after 35 minutes or so. So we will have to... If you own Trossard, if you wanted Trossard in your team, you have to keep an eye on that. Saka, the same, we mentioned him earlier. I think that at some point they're going to get much stronger defensively again, like they were at the start of the season. They're going to get better going forward because Odegaard is also back. And he obviously didn't travel with Norway. He'd been working hard at the training ground for the last 10 days or so during the international break. So I think with Odegaard back and probably very close to his full fitness and getting more game time, I think they will get naturally better with one of their best players back on the pitch after 2.5 months out. So I expect Arsenal to be good, and they need a winning streak, let's be honest now, because they are already far behind Liverpool and City. So they need to put 4, 5, 6 games in a row where they win. And they have the schedule. They're not all easy, obviously, but they've got a good schedule for it. Forest at home could be tricky because Forest have been that good this season, but it's a game you expect them to win. And then after that, you go to West Ham, which is a London derby, but West Ham have been horrendous form so far too. So it's maybe the right time really to invest or reinvest or add up to your already have Arsenal assets.
Yeah, Forest, West Ham, Manchester United, Fulham, Everton, Crystal Palace, Ipswich and Brentford's Arsenal's run from 12 to 19. My question here is twofold for you, Sam. As someone that doesn't have Bukayo Saka, do we all need an Arsenal attacker? And a lot of us have jumped off the Arsenal defence. Do we need an Arsenal defender?
Oh, Kels. So I've got Raya. So I have got an Arsenal defender-ish because I've got the goalie. I am wondering whether soon it might be time to go back to the double up, because I do think that defensively they'll get stronger. Like, all right, they've not kept a clean sheet since game week four, but they've just been in a bad moment, I think. And with the defenders that they have, I just don't see that continues for a long time. So I'm expecting defensive security to come back to Arsenal in that run of fixtures that you've just mentioned. There's definitely a lot of clean sheets available to them there. So my part of the reason for holding Gvardiol during the wild card was that it gives me the opportunity to move to either an Arsenal defender if I want to, or one of the Liverpool defenders if I want to. It just gave flexibility, which felt like the right thing to do. In terms of Saka, it's a big conundrum for me now. So I kept the money in the bank to go from Bruno Fernandes to Saka. Obviously now, with what's happened at Manchester United and with the way that Bruno played last week, I don't want to do that. And I also think that Bruno's fixture is much nicer this week than Arsenal's. Like, I do think that Forest game is harder with the way that Forest have been so far this season. They've been really impressive, apart from in game week 11, where they weren't so great. But the rest of the season, they've been good. So I'm not doing anything about Saka this week. But longer term, I will have to have a plan for him, because I don't think I'm going to feel comfortable having any other Arsenal attacker other than Saka. So in my head, my next thought was that come game week 13, 14... probably 14, I might look to do Mbeumo over to Saka. I need to find a little bit of extra money, but it's not a lot of extra money. It's like half a mil, which isn't bad. If I go from Gvardiol to, say, somebody like Konate, that easily gives me the money to do that. Now, that would mean not having Mbeumo, but it would give me a midfield five then of Palmer, Bruno, Saka, Salah and Rodgers, which feels really quite exciting. So I think for me, Saka feels like a player that you're going to have at some point. I just might wait an extra week to do it, because, or even 2 weeks to do it, because Mbeumo's fixtures are really nice. And if Bruno does continue to be what I think he might over the next few weeks, then it might have to be Mbeumo that's the sacrifice.
The alternative is Odegaard as well, because we saw already against Chelsea, the guy hasn't played for like 10 years. He comes back and he's the best player on the pitch, gives an assist to Martinelli, and he's obviously much cheaper than Saka. And at some point, because he's been working hard to go back to full fitness, etc., he might have a little dip simply because how much he wants to be back and how well he wants to do all the time, etc. But if you can't go to Saka because financially you just can't make it all happen, I think Odegaard, with a super low ownership now, because obviously everybody sold him when he got injured, might be a decent idea too.
Yeah, I was going to say, Odegaard for me always feels like the assister of the assist. Do you know what I mean? He's often the one that orchestrates an attack, but doesn't always get the assist.
No, that's true.
However,
that's true.
I do agree that if you can't get to a Saka or someone, then maybe he is a good alternative. Jules, have you still got your Arsenal defender? I should have checked this before the pod.
Yeah, my brother from another mother, of
Saliba,
course.
William Saliba.
So I can't ask him and get a proper answer on whether he's...
No, you can go Gabriel. Because... You can go for Gabriel, who's a bit cheaper, as we've been saying, and a threat on set pieces more than William, who is the blocker more than the goal scorer. So that would make a lot of sense, but obviously he's not as handsome as William Saliba, Paris born and bred.
Yep, not everyone picks their FPL players on their looks or their origins, but okay. On to Chelsea then. As we know, when we think of Chelsea on an FPL team, we think of Cole Palmer. He's the second most popular player in the entire game. He is, of course, also their most expensive player as well. Do we all need Cole Palmer, Sam?
I think so.
Yeah, especially on a wild card. If you play your wild card, get Cole Palmer in straight away.
I think, you know, at the beginning of the season, we all said, I think we don't need him. I think he's too expensive. I think the Chelsea fixtures are a bit mixed. I don't know if we know what we're going to get.
We were wrong, weren't we, Sam? We were wrong.
Well, yeah, I think we were in part. I mean, he has been the height of inconsistent in the opening weeks.
Yeah, there's
season,
two games, two outstanding games, really, with the three assists and the four goals. The
all
rest
right, you keep telling yourself
more.
To make yourself feel
No, no, better. But it's true.
No,
but the one thing is, though, Jules, now the fixtures are so nice. Like, this block of fixtures that Chelsea have coming up are really, really lovely. And I think when I look at that Chelsea team in terms of the rest of the attack, obviously there's Nico Jackson and you've got him instead. And that does make sense to have him in the forward line if you haven't got Palmer. The others all feel a bit punty. Like, Neto has been in a great run of form over recent weeks.
He's been really well, yeah.
Yeah, will that continue? if it does, then he's a lovely cheap option into that Chelsea team. But he might not have that consistency that we would expect to get from Palmer. Plus, Palmer's on penalties as well, right? So you get that additional benefit. So I think right now, Palmer is one of the players that you should be trying to find a route to, but it's going to be hard because of his price point.
If you can't get to Palmer, Jules, is there anyone? I mean, you've tried it, haven't you, with Jackson?
Can you cover him? Yeah, I agree. The only thing I would say, and we've said that before, is Palmer is so important for this team. And I did think at the start of the season with Maresca, because the team was better structured and they are a better team than they were last season under Pochettino, where it was pretty much the game plan was give the ball to Palmer and then let's hope for the best. Now it's more structured, there's more patterns of play, but still at the heart of everything is Cole Palmer. And if he's not playing that great, as we saw against Arsenal, for example, just before the break, then that also impacts the other players, because then Nico Jackson doesn't have the same service, doesn't have the same activity, he's not as good. And Pedro Neto saved Chelsea with a great goal on that day. But overall, the attack didn't click as well for Chelsea because Palmer was not on a good game, not having a great match. So he's that good that he influences so much everybody else around that for my Nico to do well, I almost wish Palmer will do well, because even if that cost me points in the game, and to my detriment, he helps my Nico Jackson in my team to do well and score points. So this is the massive dilemma from a Cole Palmer point of view.
What about the defence, Sam? Back-to-back clean sheets in game week 4 and 5, but since then it's been a struggle.
It has been, but the fixtures that they have coming up should see some more. I mean, it's Leicester, Villa's tough, they're scoring a lot of goals. Southampton, Spurs versus Chelsea is always ridiculous. And then after that, Brentford, Everton, Fulham, Ipswich. So there should be some clean sheets in there. And I think if you want to go cheap and go for the goalkeeper, then I don't mind that. I also quite like the Gusto pick, actually. I mean, against Arsenal, he had 3 goal attempts. One of them was a big chance. He came 3rd in expected goals, underachievers charts for game week 12. So was very unlucky not to get something. His XG was 0.60 in that one. So he's getting into the right positions. He's unlucky in that game against Arsenal to return something. And in the last 3 weeks amongst the defenders, he's top for shots taken. He's 3rd for penalty area touches and his joint 6th for big chances. So I actually quite like the Gusto pick, and he does actually rotate. He rotates really, really nicely with Lewis Hall at Newcastle as well. So if you want to go for 2 cheap rotating in your 3rd and 4th slots, you can play them every week, then having Gusto and Lewis Hall feels great.
Yeah.
Jules, anything to add? You just were agreeing.
No, just for Gusto, for people who haven't watched Chelsea too much, he's coming in midfield a lot, not just as an inverted fullback like we've seen with a lot of other teams like City and Liverpool and Arsenal, but he actually plays super, super attacking inverted midfielder, which that is more rare to see, really. So he gets into those positions on the edge of the box, sometimes as a more traditional right back, or sometimes he plays on the left, but also very much from almost an attacking midfielder position, which I think brings something very different to the game than any other fullback in the league this season. And just for that, at his price, I think he would be a very, very smart addition to anybody's squad.
We're at that point in the podcast where I say we have to rattle through. So we have to rattle through. Let's try Brighton now. They've got really nice fixtures as well. João Pedro came off the bench for around 25 minutes in game week 11. Is he back in contention to be in our team, Sam? And what about Danny Welbeck?
Yeah, at 5.5... João Pedro is looking like exceptional value for money, isn't he? And if you want to have, I think for a lot of people that have wildcarded recently, that kind of 3, 6-ish million, 6.5-ish, 7-ish million forwards has been the way that they've gone. Looking at it now, I think if I was wildcarding this week, I'd want to have Isak. So having João Pedro would stretch that budget for Isak above. So
Pedro's cheaper than Dominic Calvert-Lewin too.
So you just do that spot.
Just call him Dominic Pedro, Joao Dominic or something like that.
Because I think the other thing is with João Pedro is that even if he doesn't start and just comes off the bench for sort of 25 minutes, we've seen last week, but also in seasons gone by, that he can come off the bench and get points, right? And if he's on the pitch and they win a penalty, he takes those. So really nice cheap option. If you've got the extra 0.4, 0.5 for Welbeck, you get a bit more security with him at the moment in terms of the starts. Like Danny Welbeck has been so impressive so far this season. I really like Brighton. I like the fixtures. I also quite like the idea of the goalkeeper as well for the coming weeks, because I'm not sure exactly who you'd go for in the defence, but the fixtures are good and there should be some clean sheets. So if you're in the market for a new goalkeeper, you could go there.
Let's not talk goalkeepers. What about Newcastle then, Jules? Isak and Hall are the two names that have already been mentioned on this podcast.
Yeah.
Are they, well, you said there he's the one. I'm presuming you're meaning Isak. Any other interest?
Isak, just on Isak quickly, because he scored now in, I'm going to say, 6 games in a row. A goal in each of his last 6 games. Chelsea twice, one in the League Cup, one in the league. Then Arsenal, then Forest. Then with Sweden against Slovakia. And then they played Azerbaijan on Monday night. And he scored a goal. They won 6-0. Gyökeres scored 4, by the way. He scored one goal that was disallowed for enough. This is, if you haven't seen it, please go and check it. It's the worst decision ever made by VAR or I don't know who was in VAR. Sam
Jules,
maybe was in VAR.
We're meant to be rattling through the
No, so I just wanted to say that I felt bad for Isak because that should have been a goal, and then that would be 6-6 for him, 6 games in a row. So he's in great form. So I think Isak is even more than Lewis Hall, who I agree with Sam is a great name to keep a mind on, keep an eye on, because he's cheap and he starts and he's playing really, really well. Isak for me is the one.
Julien Laurent, the only person that can translate, rattle through, we haven't got much time to, okay, I'm going to have a rant about VAR.
That was a great point.
In international
wonderful
matches
point.
As well.
Yeah, great. Okay, then just a quick word on suspensions. I've mentioned them a few times on the pod recently. There's a few players out for this game week. They are Buonanotte, Burn of Newcastle and Ryan Christie. They got the 5th yellow card of the season in game week 11. Kamada's out for 3 matches after his game week 11 red card. Kudus is also out, of course. Bentancur is suspended for 7 matches. That means he will return for the Boxing Day fixtures. But a word of warning, there's some really popular FPL picks who are all walking the suspension tightrope. Love a cliche. Semenyo, Jackson, Martinez and Ait Nourian. Of course, 2 of those are in my team. They're all 1 booking away from suspension. So Jules, be careful. Jackson's in there as well. Your boy Ait Nourian.
Yeah.
Okay, then. No time to discuss that though, because it's time for... I wish we had a sting, like a little jingle for this. I was going to sing, but I'm not going to. Differential of the week. Last week's differentials, obviously not last week's pod, the last game week's differentials were a disaster. Let's not talk about those. Sam, who have you got this week?
I've got Jan out from Brentford this week. So 4.9 million, so nice and cheap. He's only owned by 0.6% of the game. So hopefully Jules won't moan because, you know, cheap and lowly owned. So should be nice.
And unknown.
Well, you say that, but he's got returns in all of his last 3 matches. There's 1 goal and 3 assists in his last 5 matches. And I think, you know, if you look at him since game week 7, he's had 2 shots on target and 3 attempts from inside the penalty box. So nice and attacking. He's also created 6 big chances in that time, which is the most at anyone else at Brentford. And then it's also better than everyone else in the game, apart from Mateus Cunha. So good option, I think, going into that Brentford team for the next couple of weeks. Brentford have the best home form in the league so far this season as well. 5 wins and a draw in their 6 matches. And those 6 games have featured 29 goals, which means their matches at home are averaging 4.83 goals per game. So I'm expecting there to be a lot of goals, given that they're coming up against Palace, who are yet to keep a clean sheet on the road this season. And Jano, I think, might be part of that.
Lovely. Jules. That was just very succinct, just how we like it. Now Jules is going to rant for 3 minutes.
No. I never do. My pick this week is Pedro Neto. We mentioned him a little bit when we talked about Chelsea, because he was obviously very good against Arsenal. I think he's been very good for weeks now, but just for us in the game, but even on the pitch, hasn't really transformed into points and goals and assists for him. But his numbers are good. So 6.2 million, 1.1% owned, so really low again. Not as low as Janel, but not that far. We said 9 points against Arsenal. He also returned two game weeks before that. So 2 returns in the last 3 game weeks for him as well. He creates big chances. His expected assist per 90 is quite interesting. He's just below 0.3. So I think there's a player there. He's still young, but I think especially when Palmer is good, I think that gets the best out of him. I would rather him playing on the right-hand side than on the left, but on the right is Noni Madueke, so okay, maybe. But I think he's been really good, and there's a point where he's going to get that consistency and returns week in and week out. So this would be this week.
Jules, I feel quite proud of you. Normally you give us your differential early in the pod. You can't wait. And we've discussed Chelsea, and you managed not to give it away in that part of the podcast.
I know,
you
I'm
waited.
Super happy too. I know.
you're learning. Okay, then, we've just about got time, as always, to end on transfers and captains. Jules, is there any point asking?
No. And for captain, for transfers, it's too early. Leave me alone with my transfers. I'll have
We're
a
not
thing.
Even recording early this week. Flight. It's Thursday.
I know, but I've got a long flight coming and I can do it then. And then for captain, because remember the time where it was so easy that it was just Haaland all the time, or there was a time where it was just Salah all the time and we just cool. Now we have to think. And really, this week between Haaland at home to Spurs, as we said, like Spurs conceding is a given, or Salah to against Southampton, this is so difficult. I don't know. I can do. I can just cut the armband in two and go half and half, basically.
Brilliant. That's really useful to our listeners.
You're welcome.
Sam?
I think there's some lovely options this week. So obviously Salah at Southampton, he's on my list. I also, if I didn't have the fear of the captain in the early kickoff, then I think Palmer against Leicester is nice. I am also quite seriously thinking about Bruno versus Ipswich as well, because I just like, I like that kind of new manager bounce thing and the way that he's been playing. I am probably going to give it to Salah for the first time this season. I've been waiting. I should have done it last week, shouldn't I? Like, I should have brought him in and just handed him the armband, and it feels like the right thing to do to give it to him. So it'll almost certainly be Salah this week.
Okay. So we've got a Salah captain. If I bring in Salah, I will captain him. If not, though, I'm going to keep it on Haaland with Spurs, because, Sam, you've said it yourself, Spurs don't keep too many clean
sheets. Spurs are going to go and win. 1-0 win.
If I keep Haaland, congratulations on the 3 points for Spurs, because we know how my season's found out. That's where we're going to end. I've just lost my head again, because I'm thinking about whether to do that transfer or not. You know that it's going to be left till just before the deadline, as it always is. Sam, don't mute your WhatsApp, because I'll... are you on Sky this week?
No. So you can get my attention.
You'll be accessible to me. Perfect. Jules, I'm not going to be asking you, because you'll be doing your transfers.
No. Yeah.
Look, are you going to share your team on your Instagram, Jules? Can people see what you're doing
before
there?
Yeah, I need to start doing it again, to be fair. So even if the season is not as good as I expected, I will do it this weekend.
What's your Instagram, in case people want to see what you've done?
At Lawrence Julian.
Okay, so or just something add like your name that backwards.
Yeah, maybe not. I'm not. I get confused with every social media. Maybe the other one. Maybe Julian Lawrence or something.
Okay, good luck trying to find Jules on social media. I was trying to give you a shameless plug there, but basically you've not helped yourself. Sam, you're FPL family, aren't you? And you always
everywhere.
Share your team.
Everywhere, yeah. Okay. FPL family. Yeah.
I'm Kelly Summers, but I don't share my team because it's so bad. Okay, your deadline then is 11 a.m. That's 90 minutes ahead of Leicester versus Chelsea. Off the Bench is back on Monday. It'll be Lee and Az with you this week, reflecting on everything that's happened in game week 12. Then, of course, the Fantasy Show is back this Friday. I always mean to check who I'm on with, but
I think it might be Az tomorrow.
Okay, I look forward to seeing Az or whoever else turns up to the IMG studios on Friday. We're going to have a great show. As always, guys, if you enjoy listening to this podcast, thank you very much for listening. But please do rate and review wherever you listen to us on. That's all from us this week. See you next week. Bye-bye.